Hi, this is MC Lobster, the creator and host of the Cashflow Ninja, and you're listening to Dream Chasers, interviews with the future.
You work for perfection, right? I mean, you just really kind of harness your craft and work on it day in and day out, but it's that mental prep that is so vital for your performance.
This is Dream Chasers, episode 76, with Jason Ricks.
Hey guys, what's going on? I'm Adam Carswell, and welcome to Dream Chasers, interviews with the future. On Dream Chasers, we interview individuals with supernatural amounts of potential based on early success in their careers. Thank you for tuning in. Now let's get straight to the interview.
Hey guys, this is Adam Carswell, and today I'm joined by Jason Ricks. Jason is a principal at Concordia Equity Partners. He's originally from Austin, Texas, went to Oklahoma State University, and now lives back in his hometown, Austin, Texas. Jason, thank you for being on the show. And do you have any opening remarks for my listeners?
Hey, Adam, long time no talk. I know we're always texting and emailing back and forth, but really happy to be here and have an opportunity to be on your podcast.
Really happy to have you. And that's right, Jason and I, we've known each other for, I'd say, a little bit over a year now. We both work essentially for the same company, Concordia. And it's really an honor to finally get Jason here on the show, guys. It's going to be a great conversation. Like I said, got to know him pretty well over the past year. He and I have some common ground. We are both former college athletes. I played basketball and ran track, but Jason was on the gridiron. He played football, and he was a kicker for Oklahoma State University. I'm not sure, did you play any other positions while you were there, or maybe even growing up in high school, Jason?
Yeah, I played every sport under the sun in high school, but ultimately settled on field goal kicking. I wanted to play in the Big 12, and the only difference between you and I is that you look like you could still play. I'm trying to roll out of bed without a backache. So,
yeah, and you were recently, your story, I should say, was recently featured on, oh man, help me, what's the name of the book that your story was just featured in?
Yeah, sure, it's Desire, Discipline, and Determination. It's Lessons from Bold Thought Leaders. So it was a great opportunity to work with Kyle Wilson and his team and Sakara, and they do a phenomenal job of walking me through the process. I never thought I'd be a published writer, but it was a great time.
Right. Yeah. You're officially an author now. I think if we Google your name, it should say Jason Ricks author, right?
Yes. My friends make fun of me all the time. It's great.
I guess to just talk about that too, really quick, because I know a little bit of the inside and outs of the story that you shared. But it had to do with experiencing the joys of winning a game for a team and then also the hardships of losing a game for a team as well. Is that accurate?
100%. The roller coaster life of a field goal kicker, it's very intense. I can remember, kicking a game-winning field goal away at Missouri, being special teams player of the week, the following week having to play the Sooners, who were at that time, I think, ranked number 2 in the country. It was college game day. We had Kirk Herbstreit and the team outside of the stadium, and we had 10 seconds left and 49-yard field goal, and you end up missing that by about 2 yards. And so you have the highest of highs and then the following week the lowest of lows. So it is college sports is, it's all about that mental and physical grind and being able to overcome adversity.
Absolutely. And you just gave me a flashback talking about that, and not with basketball, but with track. It's weird because with football, it is a team sport, but when it comes down to that one moment, it really is, kind of all on you, all on that, the individual. And I can remember thinking back to how stressed I would make myself because I ran the open 400 and that was, that was my event. I won 3 conference championships in a row and, really dominated with it. At the same time though, it was like every week, if I was going to be running on a Saturday, the Sunday, 6 days before the race, I couldn't help but start thinking about, what could happen or what could go wrong if I didn't win. And I'd say, thankfully, most of the time it worked out pretty well. But when it comes down to the individual in athletics like that too, it really sharpens your mental toughness, maybe in a way that I haven't even really thought about until right now when you just mentioned what you went through, which was also on national TV. I didn't have necessarily cameras pointing at me all the time. So what do you think about that?
I think pressure, when you're in those moments, it really tells you if you have any insecurities. It just shines a spotlight on yourself as a person, and I can remember times where I was not confident and you could go out there and you could feel it. It just, everything gets amplified with stress and pressure. And I used to just thrive in it. But to your point too, you work for perfection, right? I mean, you just really kind of harness your craft and work on it day in and day out. But it's that mental prep that is so vital for your performance.
Yeah, absolutely. The power of visualization is a little bit underrated sometimes. So transitioning now to real estate, Concordia Equity Partners, which I really, you know, like you mentioned, we get to talk about this a lot, but I'm curious to learn more, honestly, about, you know, what's going through your head with all these conversations that we've been having, especially with Michael Flight. So we're now going to step into the next level chamber.
All right, here we go.
When did you realize that working with Concordia Equity Partners was something that you wanted to take to the next level?
Yeah, I really reached a tipping point in my career, and I had kind of achieved what I wanted to achieve. And I can remember this feeling. It was overwhelming. It's like, is this it? Everything that I've worked for and, you know, over a decade and, you know, let's say completing over 1,000 leases and being responsible for a really large, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars of a portfolio. And I just, my soul was a little kind of shattered at the time, just because I could feel my passion for working for a corporation just kind of waning. And I knew I wasn't kind of living my dream and really kind of pursuing my purpose at the time. And so I reached a level and thought, you know, the power of the syndication business, and I'm an LP investor first and foremost, and I love the model for investing. But I wanted to add more value to others and kind of live the life based on my design and ultimately what I was passionate about. And so I knew in my heart that this was the direction that I wanted to take things. And I was lucky enough to be introduced to Michael Flight. As you know, Michael's a great guy. He's been in the business since 89 when he founded Concordia. Mm-hmm. And we really hit it off. And we have a similar mindset around value add shopping centers. Ultimately, we wanted to take this out and be GPs. And I can remember this comment that Michael said vividly to me. I was kind of searching for, you know, do I need a mentor for this business? And, you know, we had some really long conversations, and he told me, he's like, Jason, you don't need a mentor, you need a partner. We need to make this happen and work together. And I just remember that feeling. It just kind of unleashed this energy inside of me, and I haven't been able to kind of really stop the momentum.
Yeah. And to speak a little bit more about what it is exactly, we'll say, that you're doing on a daily basis, grateful to say that our listener base for Dream Chasers is very diverse. You know, we have people that know exactly, for example, what you're talking about right now. But then we also have some listeners that really don't know a whole lot about real estate, or especially commercial real estate and shopping centers. So I guess, could you give like a high level description of, you know, what it is exactly that you previously were doing and what it is that you're doing now at Concordia?
Yeah, sure. I'll give you a little background. So I started off as a broker in 2008. So everyone was hiring for brokers in 2008, right? So I interviewed with about 20 different firms. Everyone slammed the door in the face, but ultimately one group ended up giving me an opportunity, and they kind of threw me to the deep end of the pool and said, okay, let's see if you can swim. And, you know, when you're working on an all commission basis, you have to get deals done. You have to build a pipeline. You have to learn sales and marketing skills and ultimately learn the ins and outs of executing a lease transaction. So I started off my career as a broker, was a broker for 4 years, had a great opportunity to pivot my career. And I thought ultimately I really wanted to get into the asset management realm just so I could become more well-rounded and also one day become my own landlord. So I felt like that was the direction that I needed to take. I worked for a investor out of California. He was a self-made billionaire, brilliant guy. He had a large portfolio in Texas and Oklahoma. And what we did was heavy value-add shopping centers. And I'll kind of give you an idea of what we do. We really try to focus on re-merchandising, which is just a fancy way of saying tenant selection and finding kind of the right tenant mix. So if you're building a salsa, for example, right, you have certain ingredients that are going to flow well with others and others are not. So we try to find the right fit, and then we'd probably either try to repurpose portions of the shopping center. For example, we could, you know, add a outparcel building for a drive-through restaurant. Mm-hmm. And then we would also focus on renovating existing properties, right? So to dig it a little bit deeper, we would buy 100% vacant buildings. We would buy them on what we call a per pound basis or per square foot basis. So we'd buy a 300,000 square foot former Walmart. Mm-hmm. We'd have to re-tenant that space, subdivide utilities, usually add a new roof, new storefronts, new facades, update the parking lot, parking lights, and then find the tenants to ultimately be able to backfill those spaces. And then once we were successful in doing that, we'd explore, hey, can we put an ATM on the site? Could I build a building for Chick-fil-A? Would that be on a ground lease? Would we want to sell them the land, or would we want to build it ourselves and recoup those rewards? And so that was, in essence, what we've been doing. And ultimately, like any good asset manager, if you're doing the things well, ultimately the landlord's going to liquidate and sell that portfolio, which is what he did. I saw the writing on the wall, and I ultimately wanted to take my career towards more the institutional side of things. I felt like working for a REIT would really kind of help round out my career. And I was given an opportunity to run a very large portfolio of what we call mixed-use retail. So if you could imagine apartments on levels 2 through, 15 or whatever the height of the building, mm-hmm. and then on the ground floor, we'd have retail. And that was so much fun because it was totally different from what I was used to, just the construction aspects of it. I really was working hands-on with developers, performing the future rents and forecasting things, and ultimately working with the management leasing departments to really make those things successful and add value where I could. In a nutshell, I was really kind of a broker that started off that filtered into asset management and got to a place in my career where I saw the writing on the wall where it basically was, do I want to climb the corporate ladder or do I want to take my skill set and move into a general partner role, which in essence we would be pooling investors together to be able to go after large value add shopping centers instead of, for example, maybe me just buying one single family home and trying to manage and lease that out. So the beauty of syndication is you can go bigger, faster, and folks that don't have the time necessarily to be a retail expert can pull their money in with Michael and myself and reap the profits.
All right. Yeah. Thank you for breaking that down. Two things you mentioned there, I guess this is a two-part question. The first one, you referenced how you have experience in mixed use properties, which from my observation tend to still be increasing in popularity even to right now. It seems like over the past 5, 6, maybe even 7 years, they've just been popping up everywhere. So I guess, would you agree with that? And do you think there's still a pretty strong future for mixed use? And then the other part to the question is, what's your take on the retail apocalypse? Because I know I like personally, when I get that asked that question on other shows, I always like to share some secrets that I think people don't know about retail real estate. But I'd like to get your take on those two things.
Yeah, sure. I think the first part of the question, you're dead on. Keep in mind, cities love retail, so they can typically collect sales tax, right? So anything sold in that space, the city was going to get some sales tax. Additionally, when you develop apartment complexes, if you, depending on the location in a municipality, typically you can add more residential units if you add ground floor retail. So a lot of these mixed use developers really despise retail, and they tell me all the time, like, you're the flea on the end of the tail of the dog. Like, you're not going to wag the entire project, right? So you're very minuscule and compared to to the rest of the development. But it's your front door, and you try to make the right tenants in there that are going to make the apartment development successful as well. So it's a blend of, hey, developers want to add as many units as they can on the land, and if that means they have to build retail, then why not? Second part of your question, I get this all the time, and I think it's really unique because you look at all of the store closings and you read all the headlines and you think that retail is in a really bad place. Mm-hmm. Ironically, last year we had the record high in retail sales, believe it or not. I also always go to a website called NAREIT, and they talk about performance on NOI and rent growth and where we're at in the process. What's been happening on the retail front is NOI growth hasn't been as robust as multifamily or industrial, but it's still in a positive direction. Investor sentiment for retail developments are actually, we've kind of hit a slow pause. I think we're probably oversaturated with underperforming Class C and B malls. And so demalling and kind of getting rid of that product that has a lot of functional obsolescence and isn't really the direction of consumer spending and consumer sentiment. So you're seeing still progressive NOI growth. However, cap rates have dropped drastically. Whereas if you look at the other asset classes, right, like apartments or industrial, man, these cap rates are really being suppressed. Mm-hmm. And so that margin of safety is really dwindling. So, you know, for example, I can go buy a stable asset today on a 9 cap, right? And that's cash flowing day one. It's a Class B shopping center in a decent market. If I were to buy the exact same thing on the multifamily side, that thing's probably trading at a 5.5-6 cap. Mm-hmm. And so there's a great difference and the value there. And so Michael and I are trying to use our analytical and behavioral expertise to really kind of bake in that arbitrage and find value for investors.
Yeah, and you used a captivating word there or phrase, which is 9 cap. Again, I guess, first of all, could you explain to some of our listeners what exactly that means? But then on top of that, another two-part question for you. Can you talk about perhaps any of these deals that we're looking at right now at Concordia, just for an awareness perspective for anyone listening that is an investor that does like the sound of that word, that phrase, 9 cap?
Yeah, sure. I kind of use it in layman's terms. It's kind of describing price, but it's really the relationship between if you were to buy a property with all cash in relation to NOI. So if we were to buy a shopping center, let's say for $10 million and the cap rate's 9%, we would get a 9% return, right? And so if you divide those two numbers, you ultimately end at your purchase price. And so a lot of, I guess, people in the industry will quickly kind of use cap rate as kind of a metric for determining value. And there's a lot of things that go into the value, but mostly it's really the price that investors are willing to pay. So for example, as lending is very attractive right now and interest rates, as you know, are historically low, cap rate suppression or a lower cap rate just means that there's more of a premium placed on multifamily right now versus retail shopping centers. Mm-hmm. And that wasn't always the case. It used to be the other way around back in the 80s and 90s, and it's flipped since.
Right. Okay. Are you able to elaborate at all at any of the deals that we're negotiating at Concordia and, you know, maybe raise some awareness or interest for our listeners?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So what Michael and I go after, we try to find kind of hidden value in shopping centers. We try to stay out of the markets that are overheated, that have a lot of speculation. We, again, to my point I made earlier, re-merchandising, repurposing, or renovating existing shopping centers, we're trying to find that hidden value. We typically go after what I would say Class B, blue-collar shopping centers that have a lot of services, maybe a grocery store anchor, that protects the asset from competition from online. So people have to get services done. They have to get medical services done. You got to get your grocery store, you know, in there as well to kind of generate some traffic. And also we look at opportunities for a lot of the buildings we have almost under contract have drive-through restaurants on them, right? We call those out parcels or pad sites. And usually you can buy a shopping center for maybe $100 a foot below replacement cost. REITs will pay a premium if you subdivide that parcel where the fast food chain is. Mm-hmm. They can maybe pay close to $200 a foot, right? So there's a baked in arbitrage right there already day one that we could take advantage of just being creative and finding unique opportunities. We're looking, you know, we've got, I think, 4 deals out there right now at LOI. We are negotiating on a shopping center in Sparks, Nevada that we're getting very close on. So Michael and I will have some offerings here to the to our investors here in the near future.
Perfect. And yeah, for everyone listening, we will give out Jason's contact information at the end of the interview, as well as it will be in the show notes too. But all right, this is great. Good to share what it is exactly that you're building and working on at Concordia. And I should also say, you know, really with me too. It's kind of weird. This is the first
time. Yeah, that's right. Well, we're building. That's right, man. Yeah. No, you've been awesome. I think Michael was telling me yesterday that you posted something online, and when he was in, I think he was in Nashville or Memphis, one of those cities, and he already got some. Hey, why didn't you come visit me?
Yep.
So Adam's a little, as you know, he's not super savvy when it comes to social media, but that's you've been offering a ton of value. It's been great, and obviously you and I hung out at ICSE Recon and some of the real estate guys' shows, so really fun.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think we'll be quick plug to the Intelligent Investors Real Estate Conference coming up in late January. I think the 25th and the 26th, January 2020. I know I'll be there. I think Michael said that you'll be there. I'm not sure.
Yeah. That's where we first met, I think, right? At Hunter's event. Yeah, totally. No, that'd be fun. That we had a really good show that time. So looking forward to it. And you know, it's a tough life going out to Marina Del Rey. So, right.
Right. Yeah. In January too. Right. But, all right, great. Well, I've got three fun questions for you, Jason, to close this out. Looking forward to your answers here. I'm going to shoot them out at you and you can tackle them whichever way you want. The first one is, what was your favorite game that you ever played at Oklahoma State University? Second question is, who has your favorite tenant to work with in regards to leasing, you know, certain stores, certain tenants? Who's been your favorite one to work with? And then the last question, these are all really tough now that I'm thinking about this last one, is what has your favorite deal of all time been?
Oh, wow.
And I guess that you could also do like whatever just comes to mind first too. Doesn't necessarily have to be your favorite. Yeah.
I've got a fun story. Let me tell you, my first game I ever played was in the Rose Bowl. I had just turned 19 years old.
Wow.
I had no idea what was going on. So we fly across the country. So this is my first experience in college. We fly across the country in a chartered plane. We stay at this gorgeous hotel. We have the CHIP police officers, right? Guys on the bikes, literally leading us through traffic in LA. I know you're familiar with LA. So imagine getting a chauffeur ride from the police to the Rose Bowl. First game, ABC, you know, primetime game against UCLA. Completely beside myself, right? Go out there. I think I kicked two field goals that day. We ended up, the game got really close in the third quarter, so I needed to make kind of a critical kick leading into the fourth quarter. But the highlight of it was Gary Busey was on the sidelines. Now, I don't know how the hell Gary Busey got on the sidelines for Oklahoma State. I have no clue. So as a kicker, you probably know we're not in the game all the time, right? So we get our number called and we may be going out there for a total of 5 minutes. The game's 4 hours. So right. Gary is chatting me up the entire game. I'm like, what is, like, you know, I remember this dude from like Under Siege, right? So I'm like cracking up. And so he starts talking to me. He wants to understand how to kick and punt a ball. Towards the end of the game, Gary grabbed all my footballs and was like, hey, I want to punt these into the stands to really get everybody fired up. And I was like, holy, you know, I don't want to cuss on your podcast. So I was like, oh my, like, what is, no, we can't literally punt these balls, Gary, into the stands. So he's like, okay, I'm three, I'm going to punt it. And I'm like, what do I do? You know what I mean? Like, right. I have no idea. He must have like some kind of sideline pass. Anyway, he totally psyched me out. He ended up not doing it. We had some of our equipment staff come over and be like, hey, what's going on over here? This guy's looking like he's about to kick this thing. So I imagined every football game was going to be like that. It clearly was not, but just a really memorable game, you know, on ABC in the Rose Bowl, just the history of it. And then the unique aspect of getting chatted up with Gary Busey on the sideline. So that's only could happen in LA though.
Right.
None of my home games were like that.
Okay. That's a memorable, that's a great choice in game.
Oh, so much fun. Second part question, who are my favorite tenants to work with? You know, I've got a list of national tenants that I really like and admire. I think it's the groups that have a lot of integrity. And I know what Michael Fly would say, the tenants that pay rent. I'll go into a little bit more detail than that, but you know, I love operators that are invested in a long-term perspective. They're not after short gains. A lot of these publicly traded companies, you know, it's a different model than like, let's say a mom and pop retailer. So the idea would be, I love working with people that are really heavily invested, that have a great training program for their employees, take care of them and add value to the community. So there's a laundry list of them, but, not all retailers are created equal. If I had to pick, you know, I love working with, you know, Tractor Supply has been a really great tenant for us in the past.
Okay.
You know, I'm working with Amazon on a few opportunities right now. They really take care of their folks and a lot of fitness right now. So Planet Fitness was a really big tenant of ours and they do a tremendous job.
Nice. Good to know. I knew that about Tractor Supply Co., that they've got a pretty strong reputation right now. First time really hearing about the good things about the other two you mentioned. Not that I ever heard bad things, but that's reassuring to hear. So nice.
Yeah.
Last.
And then remind me, what was the last question?
Your favorite deal of all time, or maybe just the favorite one that comes to mind, because I'm sure you've done plenty.
Sure. I'll tell you one that was very, very challenging. So we had a property in Del City, Oklahoma. Most people don't know where Del City, Oklahoma is. It's next to Tinker Air Force Base. Ironically, my parents met there. They were both in the Air Force, and they had a house. But anyway, off topic. We had an old shopping center that was built in the 50s, okay? And the way they built these things in the 50s, they didn't have really great ceiling height. So we had this vacant property that we bought on auction.com. We were losing cash flow on it. We had nothing there. And my owner at the time says, Jason, whatever it takes, get deals done. I said, okay. Save-A-Lot, Dollar Tree, and I had other tenants that wanted to be at the shopping center. They told me that the ceiling height wasn't tall enough for them. So I said, okay, let me figure out, let me give it to a really smart engineer to tell me how the hell we can literally raise the roof on a 50-year-old building, right? So I got the math back from the engineer in order to increase the ceiling height by 6 feet. It was staggering. Adam, it was nuts. Like, no way any of these deals could pencil. So I didn't know what to do. I went back to my owner. My owner was really tough, by the way. He was brutal. And he just chewed me a new one. He was like, figure it out. You have to find a way to get these done. So I approached the city. I had no idea what I was doing. And I asked them if they could help us kind of beautify their area of town. And we've got these really great tenants, and we want to revitalize this shopping center, but we can't to make the math work. It doesn't make sense from us to be able to do this. And I don't want to lease to just kind of a typical flea market or, you know, some other kind of run-of-the-mill tenant that's just going to really wear down the shopping center and the area. So we ended up negotiating a TIF agreement, which is just a fancy way of doing like a tax advantage deal for the landlord in order to make the math work. And so it was kind of like three deals in one. And we totally revitalized the shopping center. Now it's thriving.
Nice.
And, you know, you took something that was really decrepit and old, and we completely remodeled it. We added in the right merchandising mix, and today it's thriving, and the value of it just like overnight, you know, 10x on the value. It's fun to be a part of those, and I learned so much working with the city. So that was a great opportunity experience.
Del City. All right. What's the name of the shopping center?
Del City Shopping Center, man. So, yeah, there's not, I think I think at one point it was called Del Crest, but I think we changed it to Del City Shopping Center.
There you go. Got to rebrand it.
Oh God. Yeah. So much rebranding. You know about that.
Perfect. Well, awesome, Jason. It's been great having you finally on the show. What is the single best way for anyone listening to follow up and get in touch with you?
Yeah. Feel free to reach out to me via email. It's jason@concordiarealty.com. And always happy to, you know, chat with folks if they're interested in retail, or if they just want to talk about real estate in general. I'm always, I'm a dork about this stuff. So I love talking with like-minded folks.
Perfect. Again, thank you one more time, Jason, for coming on the show. Any closing remarks from my listeners?
No, just, you know, continue. I'm happy to add value where I can, and always open to talk to any of your listeners about retail. And thanks again for having me on, Adam. And I know we'll be emailing and talking soon.
Absolutely. Thank you. Guys, thank you for tuning into Dream Chasers, interviews with the future. We will catch you in the next episode. Remember, in all you think, say, and do, take it to the next level.